Over 5 million people play football in the USA, and here to bring it to you in the raw, uncut, unadulterated is the undisputed number one sports show in Atlanta and abroad. 100 yards of football, live from headquarters. It's more than a game, more than a show. It's where football blends culture, economics, and society. Tap in, tune in, and lock in to 100 yards of football now.
Our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, including updated odds on the NBA and NHL playoffs, Major League Baseball, fights, and even next season's NFL futures. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering needs, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino and poker games. It's super easy to get started, so head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and use our promo code BELIEVE to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline. Where the game starts.
Welcome to 100 Yards of Football. And tonight on our legend segment, we got a legend. We got an FSU legend on, ladies and gentlemen. We got on with us tonight, man, one of the greatest offensive linemen to come out of Florida State. My friend, my guy, Mr. Forrest Connolly, better known as Big Four. Four, welcome to the show, man.
What's going on, brother? Glad to be here.
Hey, man, it's always good to see you. You know, you and I met some years ago, and we did a lot of things together in the past, man, and became real good friends, real good buddies, and I really appreciate you taking time to be with us tonight.
Absolutely, man. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, awesome, man. Awesome. Well, folks, you know, let's talk about FSU a little bit. We're going to talk about that. You're doing so much in your career and your career path, and we're going to try to touch as much as we can tonight. We got about 45 minutes to do the show. But anyway, you came from, and this is the most amazing thing, Berlin, Connecticut. First of all, where is Berlin, Connecticut?
Berlin, Connecticut is a small town in between New Haven, Connecticut, and Hartford, Connecticut. Funny thing is how I ended up in Connecticut. I was born in Tallahassee. Born in Tallahassee. And I lived in Lakeland, Florida, and the majority of my childhood was in Gainesville, Florida. Okay. And then I moved up to Connecticut with my father to finish up high school after my freshman year. You know, because I was at that point in life where, you know, you're going from a boy to a man. Right. And my mom felt like, okay, this is the time you need to be with your father to get that whole concept and learning how to be a man. So I moved up to Connecticut, and my dad moved to Berlin, Connecticut, of all places.
So when we talk about Berlin, all right, so you grew up in Florida.
Yeah.
And so you understood that football was king.
Absolutely.
And then you go to Berlin, and I'm quite sure, I don't know, you tell me, football was not king in Berlin.
No, it wasn't. But let me tell you something, though. It's some tough guys that came out of there.
Oh, absolutely.
I used to scrimmage. We used to scrimmage against a team from a town called New Britain. And there was this young kid on the team about 2 years younger than I. And he used to destroy us every time we played him. We would beat him up because we had a really good football team. But this kid would destroy us. That kid ended up being a guy named Tabucky Jones that went on to play at Syracuse University and played with us. A couple of Super Bowls with the New England Patriots. Best athlete I've ever seen in Connecticut.
Wow.
Also, in my area, there's a guy named Dwight Freeney that came out of that area.
Okay.
The town next to mine is where Aaron Hernandez came out of.
What?
We know that. I love his stuff. Athletically, you know, he's one of the best athletes we've ever seen.
Absolutely.
You've got Scott Burrell is another guy that came out of that area. You've got an abundance of athletes that were really good football players. But when you look at the amount of athletes, I mean, it can't compare to what I came from Florida. Not at all.
Right. Well, man, I'm telling you, man, it's amazing. And here's the other thing, you know, like most of us who, you know, play ball, went to Florida State, we maybe went on and played ball. A lot of us, when we were like 13, 14, nobody would have ever said to us, you're going to be a football player. And you're going to college to play football, and you might play in the NFL one day. But you, as a ninth grader, tell me what kind of size you had in the ninth grade.
Ninth grade, I was 6 foot four and a half, 278 pounds.
God, as a ninth grader?
Yeah, ninth grade. They made me play varsity football. I had always, growing up in Gainesville, I could never play Little League football because the weight limit was 120.
Weight limit, right.
Absolutely. And the junior league was 140. Well, I was 142.
Right, right.
I couldn't play in the junior league coming up. And so I played soccer. I played basketball. And I always looked forward to high school because there was no weight limit. I could finally play. And right. You know how the high school coaches come out and talk to the middle school kids?
They came
out and talked to us about playing in the freshman program, and I was excited. And then the coach stopped me when everybody was leaving to go back to class. Mm-hmm. He said, son, I want you to play on the varsity for me. And I'm looking at him like, man, I ain't never played football. For any other kid, that's an honor. You know, they want to play varsity football. For me, like, okay, I'm big, but I don't know what I'm doing out here. And so, 2 weeks prior to me starting high school, I had been practicing football with the football team. And nobody knew until when you're in high school, you know, the freshman team plays on Wednesday.
On Wednesday,
so the kids will wear their jerseys on Wednesday, the class. The JV plays on Thursday, so they will wear their jerseys. Right. So Friday, here I come, you know, in these freshman classes, with a football jersey on, everybody's like, "You're on the varsity." it was some growing pains.
Oh, absolutely!
Because I didn't know just the basics of how to play the game, but the guys that I played with taught me, mm-hmm. you know, how to play. And a lot of neighborhood guys that we looked up to, that I looked up to, you know, they didn't baby me, but they brought me along.
They brought you along,
and, you know, they taught me the game and taught me how to play the game.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's amazing, man, when you talk about the neighborhood. Pop Warner started in my hometown in 1968. I was in the fourth grade. So I got a chance to experience that. But even before then, for the streets of Delray, every street had their own team. And so I was always, you know, in the summer, I had to go to my grandmother's house. So I played on my grandmother's street. Then my first cousin's like my big brother. He's 2 years older. I would play on his street. And that's really where I got it, because I was playing with older boys over there, right? Getting my behind whooped up and picked up and thrown. And then, you know, when you start crying, your big brothers, your big cousins say, stop that crying out here. So you get tough. You learn toughness. So I learned toughness. And then, you know, from an athletic standpoint, man, I can outrun everybody. Even guys 2 years older than me. So God gave me that gift. And then my cousin that in the street gave me the toughness that I needed. And by the time, man, it's amazing. By the time I started playing Pop Warner football, you know, a coach couldn't tell me how to catch the ball. He couldn't tell me how to run the ball, because I could run the ball, and he couldn't tell me how to throw the ball. I had all those skills down. Now, he had a system. You know, I got to understand what, you know, the plays and the system. But, man, when I get that ball, you ain't got coach. You can't coach me after that. And so we got that from the street. We got that from the neighborhood. You know, and just like you said, when you're playing with those bigger, older guys, they bring you along.
Well, you know, the thing I'll say about Florida is I developed toughness. Mm-hmm. Because in the neighborhood, we played where we called it touching the road, tackling the grass.
Touching the grass. There you go.
You know, you in the grass and you
doing your thing. You lie, baby. You lie.
Jump over to the road, you know, for them to touch it. But see, where I grew up, they didn't just touch it. They scoop you up. Take you to the grass. You had to man up in the neighborhood, and then you didn't want to cry. If you got the wind knocked out of you or something, you kind of played it off. Because if you cried, you know, the way we grew up, now you got to earn that manhood back.
You got that right.
I went up to Connecticut with a different mentality because I learned how to play down south. And also I felt like at the time, okay, I got to represent for the South. You know, they know I'm coming from Florida. You know, we heard Florida, they play ball. So I got to come up here, you know, knock some heads off. And what was different is the athleticism, I think, for the most part. I was my senior year, I ended up going to Florida State's football camp. Mm-hmm. And I weighed in at 327 pounds at 6'7", wow. And I ran 4.9 5.40.
Wow. And
I'll never forget, I was about every day at camp, before we went to camp, you know, they would come and get me. Now I have to go to the moor and sit in Coach Bowden office and talk to him about why it would be in my best interest.
That's hilarious, man.
And he went, you know, and you know how sitting in Coach Bowden office, it's almost like he's looking up at a perch to him.
Right.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah. And then Coach Cottrell, Ronnie Cottrell, was the recruiting coordinator at the time.
Okay.
He would show up at my room because we stayed at Cash Hall.
Cash Hall, man.
Show up at my room every night with the scholarship with my name on it. Like, Horace, hey, we got it all filled out for you.
We
ready for you.
I love it, man. I love it.
It was the thing about it, though, it was one of those things very humbling. Because here you got one of the greatest coaches of all time, you know, telling you he wants you to come play for him. Right. And you've got a recruiting coordinator coming to your room with a scholarship. And it was never anything illegal. Like you see a lot of schools.
Exactly.
The wrong way.
Right.
Throughout that process. And, you know, I won't go into detail, but there were schools that were putting up all kinds of stuff.
Oh, man. Tell me about it.
But the way that, you know, Florida State recruited me, and I talked to Ronnie Cottrell a couple of years ago, and I told him he did the best thing I've ever seen, you know, and ever had to me. And I think that's what kind of just flipped it. Because I was up and down. It was Miami, Florida State. they played, I don't know if you remember this, Bobby, back in 1990, we played Florida, and it was either the first or the second play of the game, Dawsey. Called like a 60 or 70 yard bomb touchdown. And I'm watching the game with my friends, and I'm still trying to decide what I'm going to do.
Right.
And all of a sudden, my phone rings. And I answer the phone, and it's Ronnie Cottrell, and you hear all the noise in the background. Forrest, you see, this is why you need to come to Florida State.
This is what we do.
We need you here.
I love it.
I was done. I'm going.
It's a wrap. Before, one of the things about your era. Okay, so when I came to Florida State, it was nothing like that, all right? But in your era, it was the most exciting time in our school history. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the type of athlete that they were recruiting, I mean, y'all was not only just the top athlete, but you guys recruited, you were deep athletically. I mean, your O-line was deep. We were always deep at the skill position on the edge, always deep. And so, and Coach Bowden, I just tell people all the time, there's never been a more genuine recruiter that I've ever met in my life than Bobby Bowden. Because when he spoke to you, you know he was telling you the truth. You knew, you can feel it in your heart. Because when I met him for the first time, I couldn't explain it. When I met him after the meeting, I told my mama. And this is my first experience with a college coach. I meet Coach Bowden in his office, and we walked out of that door. I turned to my mom. I said, I'm playing for him. And my mom said to me, son, you can't make that decision now. You got to take all your visit. I said, Mama, I'm telling you, I'm playing for that guy, right? And then I ended up going on some recruiting trips, and I came back from Michigan State, East Lansing. Now, you know, I'm not just from Florida. I'm from South Florida.
Uh-huh.
I had one little Letterman jacket, right? I go up to East Lansing, Michigan, and for the first time I saw snow, number one. And when they kind of got us from the airport, the coaches got us and they took us straight to the stadium. And they took us up in the press box. And boy, I'm talking about they were trying to sell it, man. They were selling it. And they kept saying, well, we hold about 100,000 in here. You come here, we do this. Everybody, you're going to be on TV, da 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 da. For all I could see was that white powder. And I kept saying, ain't no way in the world I'm coming up here. I can't do it. It was a great trip. But when I came back home, I went to my mom and told her again. I said, Mama, I'm on the basketball team. They depended on me and we're not doing good. I said, I'm playing for Coach Bowden. That's it. I'm not taking another trip. It's a wrap. And because everything he told me, even when I was there, it came out to be true. He treated all of us like we was his son.
Well, you know, it's interesting you said that. I had a similar situation. I visited Syracuse. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I got off the plane, it was snow up to my knees. And I was talking to the guys that were showing me around. They asked me where else was I being recruited.
Right.
So I told them I had a visit to Miami coming up, a visit to Florida, a visit to Florida State, and a visit to Penn State. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what are you doing here? They said, you're a blue chip. I'm like, man, look, Syracuse is the first school offering me a scholarship.
Right.
And I thought I'd move there. But the one thing I think with Coach Bowden that was a little different than a lot of these coaches, a lot different, I say that, mm-hmm. is you were right. He preached and he lived how he preached it. So coaches often come into our homes and tell our families, our parents, they're going to treat us like as if we are their child. And they're doing all that to sell the program and get you there. And once you're there, you're just another number. And the one thing I will say about Coach Bowden, he and I've had some great conversations. Mm-hmm. We've had some tough conversations.
Absolutely.
But it was always like a father figure, and you didn't want to let him down. Well, the one thing he would say to us after every game when we won, before he let the media and everybody in the locker room, he would always say, guys, great game. Have fun tonight. I don't want to get any phone calls in the middle of the night. And I don't want to wake up and read about you in the paper in the morning.
Absolutely.
Remember, nobody is bigger than the program.
In the game.
And what one thing that made him so genuine to me was, I remember I canceled my visit to Miami on the day I was supposed to fly out to Miami. Mm-hmm. I called and told them, hey, I'm canceling, I'm committing Florida State.
Right.
And they gave me the business. They said some things to me.
Oh, buddy, I can imagine.
And I remember Coach Bowden said, I'm still going to come see you. Because mm-hmm. that was his thing. He would come see
those you. Right.
And I said, Coach, you ain't got to come up here. I know this is far. I'm coming. Right. You ain't got to worry about that. I'm coming. No, son, I'm coming to see you.
Right.
And I had Miami, Penn State, all these other schools come to the school to see me and everybody. I mean, when Coach Bowden came, my dad took off work, and he's in the visit with me, and he's sitting there. And when Coach Bowden left, it's almost like my dad wanted to sign with him.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, and me and my dad, it went back and forth the whole time. So my dad wanted me to go to Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. Because all he was saying, son, you don't understand, a Notre Dame degree, you can do this.
You can do this, do that. Right. Absolutely.
After meeting Coach Bowden, it's like, no, I understand. I know where you're doing, what you're doing. The aura of chasing that first championship, that stood out to me more so than anything else. And, you know, also, I'm not going to lie, Florida A&M University. Let's go ahead and put it out there.
Right. So we had the culture there as well, right?
The Black college experience. Then you get to play for a legendary coach on national TV every Saturday and chase a championship. You got Burt Reynolds Hall over there. I mean, and it wasn't like, you know, people have to understand that people that are not familiar, mm-hmm. it's not like FAMU was way across town.
It was
across the street. So it's like, hey, man, you know, everything is just a lining up. And then my mom moved from Gainesville to Raleigh, North Carolina. Uh-huh. So Florida State's getting ready to join the ACC. So she's right in the middle of ACC country. It's like, man, I was destined to go here.
Absolutely. Well, you know, back in our old day, one time I got, we're always on a schedule. And I'm quite sure it was a little different by the time you got there. But in the old day, I mean, we didn't have time for ourselves. I mean, we had school, right? And we couldn't take a class after 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yep.
We had to eat all three meals. We had to sign in at the table to make sure we were there for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Mm-hmm. And from a defensive perspective, we had to watch during lunch a half a reel of tape, all right, while we eating lunch. And the graduate assistant being there, I had to sign off on it, right? And then, you know, our practice started I had to be in a meeting at 3 o'clock, right? Mm-hmm. And then that meeting lasts a little bit, and then we had to be at the practice field about 3:45. Mm-hmm. And we hit the field running, right? So And then we'll eat lunch and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it was a long day. We had, and then after we ate dinner, we had practice, we had dinner. Dinner was over at 7.
Studying.
All right. So we had from 6 to 7. But back in the old day, fall, we didn't have study hall right away. We had a 2-hour defensive meeting from 7 to 9. And then we had study hall. All right. And study hall was only for 1 hour. Now, you know, you can't study for no 1 hour in college and get it done, right? And then at 11 o'clock, we had a lights out curfew. So it was a different day. And so, you know, a lot of guys used to flunk out back then. I mean, back in the old day, you hear about guys, hey, he didn't make it, man, academically. So you had to figure this thing out for yourself, how to make it, you know, what you got to do to get your grades, right? Because we're on that crazy schedule, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was a different day. But listen, man, if I can do it all over again, bruh, I'm going the same place. Yeah. I'm going to do it the same. Yeah, bruh.
The only thing I would do different, two things I would do, mm-hmm. I would leave with at least 2 master's degrees. And right. I would have been more into working out and developing muscle mass to prevent injury.
Right.
More than anything else.
Right.
But outside of that, I wouldn't change anything about it. Anything. You know, anything. The mat drills at 4:30 in the morning, you hit them with a spoon, coming, beating on the door, you know. I was there before the Nike contract. See that okay. Nike swoosh you got right there?
Right.
The old Gray Wilson shorts that they shrunk up after one wash. You know, right. You had jock straps with Ron Sellers, Bobby Butler, Ron Simmons. You had Chuck Taylors with Callaway would chase you across the campus if you didn't turn them Chuck.
Oh, my God. Hey, listen. Jimmy Callaway was off the chain, wasn't he, man?
Absolutely, man. But that's chain. What made us, you know. And listen, we were, like you said, we had the Rec-A-Set Stadium. It was not one brick on the stadium.
Right.
But we were chasing what everybody right. else had. And what absolutely. I loved about everything when watching you guys play as I was coming up, y'all will always go anywhere and play anybody, no matter what time of day it was, and absolutely. Beat their butts. And love that about Florida
State. Right. That's right. Well, that's what really put us on the map, right? And but see, a lot of people forget that during my time or the very beginning of Coach Bowden, we were independent. Our football team was independent. Mm-hmm. So we were not locked down in the conference. So we could go everywhere and play. And I remember my junior year is when we really start to travel and play everybody. It's my junior year, we went to Baton Rouge and played LSU, when LSU was, you know, all that, right? And of course, you know, nobody gave us a chance, man. We hung LSU in Baton Rouge, right? Mm-hmm. And then the next year we go and we played Nebraska out in Lincoln back in the Tom Osborne days. So I have to say Tom Osborne because it's not Nebraska today. The old Nebraska was no joke, right?
You know, I saw him twice.
You know, you saw him twice.
Yeah.
And you got the rain 1 year against him, right?
Man.
Oh, bro.
I still hurt from that game, man.
You still hurt from the game, right? Because Nebraska, if I had to define that program, back in the old day, they were the strongest football team in the nation. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were very physical. I mean, they knew about the weight room. All of a sudden, they were cornbread fed growing up, right? Just big old football players. And then the guys I played against in the league from that, Roger Craig, Tom Raffman, all of them great, big, strong backs, mm-hmm. right? You know, guys just strong, man, and physical. Well, we go to Lincoln and beat them in Lincoln, right? And then we go to the next week, Pittsburgh, probably next to that LSU. No, y'all had some teams that was loaded, but the LSU team a few years ago, they had all those draft choices that 1 year, right? Pittsburgh was just like that. They had 16 draft choices my senior year, but they had about 40 NFL players on, because Marino was like a sophomore, mm-hmm. right? And so we beat them half near to death the following week. After we beat Nebraska and Lincoln, they came to Tallahassee and we hung them, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that year we went out and we're ranked number two behind Georgia and didn't get the opportunity to play for the national title. So they took number six Notre Dame, jumped number two Florida State, and played Georgia in the Sugar Bowl for the title. Bro, I want you to know how bad that hurt. To this day, I'm still hurting. I'm hurting right now.
But maybe Vince Dooley doesn't have a championship.
Well, let me say this. Every time I see Coach Dooley, I have to tell him. I say this to him every time.
I got lucky.
Coach, I say, how you like that rain y'all paid for? That's what I say to him. How you like that rain y'all paid for? Because y'all didn't play the right team. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you right now, we'd have spanked them boys. That's all I'm saying.
But Papa, one thing about Florida State at the end of the year, if they had the playoffs like they have now, every year we would have been in the playoffs. Absolutely. Because we were always trending up at the end of the season. Outside of that first year when we lost those back-to-back games, and I think what happened with that is everybody got beat up in the LSU game, that rain game down in Baton Rouge. Right. When we came back, we played Miami. We had that first wide right, and after that, with the injuries and whatnot, going down to Florida, we just kind of knew, okay, we're not going to play for it. And guys, I mean, we hung in there for a while with those guys, but we were just beat up. But outside of that, every other year, nobody wanted to see us.
Nobody. Hey, bro. Hey, listen. I'm just telling you, FSU football was so good before your era, through your era, and after your era. I mean, we were so good for so long. That was the thing. That's why right now, the old FSU alumni, they have a hard time. Because
we were good for so long. Think about this. Mm-hmm. When you talk about how great FSU was, mm-hmm. and the talent that came through, Deion Sanders, mm-hmm. considered the best defensive back of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Walter Jones, mm-hmm. considered the best left tackle of all time. Sebastian Janikowski, considered the best kicker of all time.
That's right.
Garrett Brooks. Considered the best outside linebacker covering.
Right.
I can't, you know, we know that LT is.
But
the best of all time. So those, just look at that talent pool. And then you start talking about guys that came through the program. Peter Ward, Warwick Dunn, Dalvin Cook, Peter Bulwer, Renard Wilson. Charlie Ward. You look at the guys that Coach Bowden let go. Because, see, Coach Bowden gave away maybe two championships when he let Randy Moss go. Like, imagine
Let's not skip that. I want you to slow down. I want you to let everybody know, because a lot of people don't know Randy Moss even came to Florida State.
I was there with him my senior year.
Tell me about Randy Moss.
Let me tell you something, man. Randy Moss, first of all, he's this polarizing figure. Mm-hmm. You know, tall kid, came in lanky, about 6'4", mm-hmm. and he talked the talk. But when he got on the field, you know, Mickey Andrews, and you know playing for Mickey.
Oh, yeah, I know Mickey, right?
If you got beat, Mickey would make the defensive back bear crawl all the way back from the point on the field that he got beat.
All the way back.
I would see Randy Moss line up and tell guys, hey, get ready to bear crawl. I'm going on this route right here. And you're not going to be able to stop me. And he would just destroy people out there. We had all Americans. You know, we had guys that.
Oh, yes. You had all Americans. That's right.
And he destroyed them. Wow. And because of the situation, Coach Bowden redshirted him.
Right.
And, you know, unfortunately, you know, he got into an issue, you know, outside of the program, mm-hmm. and Coach Bowden decided to move on. But think about this. During that time, you had the Lavernius Coles and had Randy Moss.
Right.
Now, you got both of those guys on the team with Peter Warrick. What do you do?
Wow. I mean, bro, let me say this. There's no game plan for that.
Nothing.
If you don't have enough dudes in the secondary, you can't cover one of those guys.
Nothing. You can throw a 5-yard out to any of them. They're going to take it to the house. They don't have to go deep. You know, these are guys that were just playmakers all over the field. So, you know, it's funny. I look back at my recruiting trip. It was myself, Derek Alexander, Derek Brooks, Clay Shiver, Juan Laureano, Devin Bush, Warren Sapp, wow. Ellis Johnson, Kevin Carter, Philip Riley, Marquette Smith, all these guys were on our recruiting trip, and only about five of them didn't go.
Wow.
You know, so it,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was crazy. The talent
That's crazy.
That yeah. was there, it was yeah. crazy. You couldn't have played
it. Man, it was crazy. But I remember what that felt like for me, because you know how you get when you're in the NFL locker room. You brag about where you come from, right? And everybody talk about their skills, man. And here's the thing. When I first got in the locker room, in the Falcons locker room, you know, everybody in the locker room, we beat them all. So when I talk to them, you know, they bowed out, right? When I talk to the FSU thing, they were bowed out, right? That was 1981, 82, 83. Then all of a sudden, we drafted three guys from Oklahoma. And, you know, I lost twice to Oklahoma. Uh-huh. I had to shut my mouth, right? But during the current years, you know, when the things, you know, when Jamie Dukes and, you know, and then Dion was young and came to the program, and when it started to build, you know, up until you guys, matter of fact, I flew down to see you guys play one time, the Miami game. I think that was the first wire, right?
Yeah.
In Tallahassee.
Yeah.
Me, Jamie Dukes, and a couple other guys, we took a private plane. We had a game in Atlanta against the Packers the next day. Mm-hmm. But Miami was ranked number two, and we were ranked number one.
Yep.
And I said, we can't miss this game. So we rented a plane, and we flew down to Tallahassee, man, stood on the sideline, got to play a game the whole day, and we on our feet the whole game on the sideline. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget that game. Because Charlie wasn't playing. And Mark, Rick, and I grew up together pretty much in South Florida, mm-hmm. right? My best friend dad coached him in high school.
Okay.
And so Mark would be at his house all the time. And that was my second home, right? Mm-hmm. So Mark came up to me during the game. And he pointed to Charlie. He said, "You see that kid right there?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "He's going to be our next quarterback." And I'll be honest with you. I said, "Yeah, we'll see, right, right, okay, well, yeah, we'll see." And next thing you know, it was the Charlie Ward show. And you protected Charlie Ward, right?
The spring game, we'll take the spring game. We knew what Charlie was. Every spring game, fans would come out to watch him embarrass the first team wow. defense. And back wow. then, we had the number one defense in the country.
In the country,
exactly. Embarrassed them,
exactly.
And the thing about blocking for Charlie was you. Put so much into it because you knew he can make a play out of anything. Right. And exactly. I think his calm demeanor is the reason we won the championship. I remember right. he threw his first interception the year before. He had like an exorbitant amount of interceptions.
Interceptions, I remember.
They were talking about, you know, pulling him. Mm-hmm. And so when we played that Georgia Tech game up here in Atlanta.
I remember that game.
Behind, and they mm-hmm. got in a shotgun. And he brought us back. They saw, okay, this is what we need to do. We got to get away from that traditional eye back.
Right.
And we got to spread them out and just right. let them be good.
Right.
And so, you know, when you play for somebody like that, I remember we were playing at North Carolina. We were number mm-hmm. one in the country. They were number mm-hmm. seven. First mm-hmm. night game at Kenan Stadium ever on ESPN. Wow. They're hyped up. They were undefeated.
Yeah.
They're talking big noise. And I can say it now. 30 years later, right. we went out the night before.
So, you know, that's how sure y'all was.
My mom lived in Raleigh, so I knew a bunch of people there.
Oh,
so
okay.
I had my boys, can we all went out?
Okay.
We were over at NC State at a party, hanging out. And we see the Carolina girls over there with their guys, Letterman jackets on. We,
right, hey, right. we
doing what we do. Hey, how you doing?
Right, right.
Like, what y'all doing out here? Our boys home resting. You know, y'all got a game. We're going to beat y'all tomorrow. We were laughing like, man, do y'all seriously think?
Right. Y'all seriously think?
Exactly. And we get in the game, and Charlie throws his first interception of the season.
All right.
And everybody's freaking out. You know, he threw an interception. He's just got this calm demeanor like, okay.
Calm demeanor.
You know, we'll get it calm. Back. And we go in at halftime, and they're up, I think, 7-3.
Mm-hmm.
And – you could, the way Kenan Stadium was back then, their locker room was right next to ours. So okay. we could hear them. And they were talking. And
they were talking all
that. They ain't all that we yet.
All right.
So score 7-3 at the half. The final score was 33-7. Exactly. And that was Warwick Dunn's coming out party. That's right. What Warwick Dunn right. It gave him the prop. I remember, right. You know, he just took over that game. And from there, you know, it was like, okay, yeah, this is our time. Because, you right. know, we already beat Miami. Yeah, we got past yeah. that monster, that right. monkey off our back. And, you know, it was like, okay, with Charlie back there, it's like, I got the Heisman Trophy winner back here. I got to give up whatever I got to give up, ankle, right. knees, elbows,
right.
hips.
Right, right.
Can't touch my guy.
Right, exactly.
And you right. know, we had something special. And right. the thing about it, if a play was broken, it didn't matter. He could make something out of nothing.
He'll make something out of nothing, absolutely. And then, yeah, and then you know, with him and Warwick in the same backfield, because Warwick was young.
Exactly.
But let me tell you something, man. That young man was special. Different. So I look at you guys up front, because I'm a firm believer, I don't care what nobody say, if you can win in the trenches, you're going to be a good football team and you're going to win games. And so you guys up front set the tone, and y'all won at the line of scrimmage. And then when you add a special guy like Charlie and a back like Warwick, and I can imagine how tough it was, because, see, Warwick, from a stature standpoint, remind me of Barry Sanders. And I can remember playing against Barry Sanders in the league. Sometimes you couldn't even see that joker back there, man. Mm-hmm. You know, when you see the O-line get down, I mean, he's just back there. And then when you snap the ball, you don't see him until he's in your face.
Yeah.
And then you know the kind of ability he had, right? And boy, he'll break it down, right? And so Warwick had that thing going for him, man. And I don't think – now, we've had a lot of great football players at FSU. But the combination of running back and quarterback with Charlie and Warwick, I don't think I've ever seen one as special as that one.
As much as I love that combination mm-hmm. because I played for him and blocked for him, mm-hmm. it's one that I think could rival it, mm-hmm. but I don't think we got to see the full picture of it.
Uh-huh.
And that's that Jameis Dalvin Cook combination.
Jameis Dalvin.
Jameis was a senior and Dalvin was a freshman at the time.
That's right.
We had so many backs. We still had Devontae. You still had Carlos. You still had.
See, Devontae was really the guy when you start talking about, you know, when you start talking about Jameis, right?
Yeah.
But you had Dalvin, but Devontae was the guy, especially the 2013 year, right? And he was a special back. I mean, one of the things I can say, and it goes back. And it goes back before my class at FSU. We were so deep in skill positions on offense. It didn't matter who got hurt. It really didn't. You know, I don't know if you ever heard about this guy, but if you hadn't heard about it, he's got a statue outside of the Dope Camel in Tallahassee, right?
Mm-hmm.
This guy was a fifth-year senior. And to be honest with you, Coach Bowden talked to him before the season and told him, say, look, man, you know, you're not gonna even be on the varsity again this year, you're gonna play JV. We're talking a fifth-year senior. I mean, that's demoralizing, right? You think in your senior year, at least I'm gonna be able to travel. We were so deep, Coach Bowden told him, say, look, Roger, you're gonna probably be on the JV again. He said, so, you know, if you wanna stop this, you can, or you can stay with us, what you wanna do. So Roger decided to stay with us, right? Mm-hmm. When I tell you, because at that time we had Jackie Flowers, we had Kurt Unglaub, we had a dude, I don't know if you ever heard of this guy named Mike Schumann, played for the 49ers. They called him the Dog. Came from Tallahassee, Leon, one of the smoothest route runners. He was like Fred Biletnikoff. Great comparison. Him and Fred Biletnikoff was like the mm-hmm. same guy. So we were deep. And when I tell you, every receiver went down by the second game of the season. And so Roger Overby is in the starting lineup against Kansas State. Came in the game, played the whole season. Now, this is the second game of the season. Didn't drop one pass the whole year, folks. I want you to hear what I just said now. He didn't drop a pass the whole season.
Wow.
And in the Florida game, the last game, regular game of the season, he had 3 touchdown passes in the Florida game. Well, we weren't supposed to beat Florida my freshman year. I'm just telling you right now. And so to this day, his statue is outside of Doe Campbell. You'll see number 86, and he's got the black eye under there, right? That's a guy named Roger Overby. So we're so deep outside wide, it don't matter. Next man up. You go down, next man up. Let's go. Let's play ball, right? And so that's what we've always had at FSU, right? And so I love what we've had. So now when we talk about your team, the first national championship team, we talk about Charlie, we talk about Warwick. Talk about the entire offensive line for me.
Well, the offensive line on the split side, you had Juan Laureano, 6'5", probably about maybe 290, between 290 and 300 pounds. Okay. Great footwork. Played on an 0-10 team in high school, but was an All-State and Super 24 player. So that lets you know how good he was.
He was really good.
Next to him, we had the Iron Man, Lewis Tyre. Lewis Tyre started every single game from freshman year all the way through his senior year.
Wow.
At center, we had Clay Shiver. You know, Clay was the All-American. Probably the best centers to ever come out of Florida State University. Right. You know, he had lineage. That was Stan Shiver.
Stan Shiver, right.
You know, I don't know if some of the fans, you don't know about Stan Shiver. Stan Shiver will knock your block off, man.
Knock you out. That's right.
He was known for knocking people out.
That's what he did.
And then at our left guard, at our tight guard, you had Pat McNeil, who was All-American all 4 years at Florida State. And he was the only junior. We were all sophomores. Then at strong tackle, you had me. Mm-hmm. And the thing about that, and to tell you how, guys, I have a story that kind of rivals the guy you were just talking about. We had, after my redshirt freshman year, because my true freshman year had ACL reconstruction surgery. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get to play and put pads on again until as a redshirt freshman. Mm-hmm. Well, I was angry the whole year. Because here I am. I come to Florida State as the man.
Right.
I'm not playing.
You're not playing, but right.
All exactly. The guys that came into my class, because we had six offensive linemen coming to my class, they were all playing. They had all started a game and were playing consistently. The only time I was getting was when we were blowing somebody out at the end of the game.
Right.
And so coming into that spring, they had a competition at split tackle between myself, Juan Laureano, and Jesus Hernandez. And I outplayed all of them.
Right.
And I should have gotten that position. And Coach Scott didn't name me the starter. He put me at third team. And what I did was I went and I worked my butt off that summer. I went to Coach Shaw and I said, Coach, can you train me?
Coach Shaw.
He said, Forrest, if you come out here every day, I'll train you. And Coach Shaw had me out there. Now, Bobby, I'm 340 running quarters.
Yes, you're running quarters or fifths. Which one?
Yeah, quarters, man. I was running quarters, man. I was putting it in. And let me tell you something, man. I worked my tail off because that's what we did in those days. We didn't ask for anything to be given to us.
It was
we got it. And, you know, we got it from the mud. And, you know, Coach Shaw, I never missed a day. And when I showed up at camp, I was a different dude.
Oh, you're ready to go.
And I was ready to knock somebody out and also had the endurance to be able to run that offense that we were running, because I think that is something that people didn't realize. You could be a great lineman, but to play in the offense that we play in, you had to be in shape.
You had to be in shape, dog.
We would play games where we would see guys, they would have little signs that they would do and fake injuries and fall down. Guy would just fall down. And we would be out there, we would be talking noise, but I'd be like, get up! You ain't hurt. We know what's up.
We will keep going. Well, I'll tell you another thing, Fo, that there's some secret sauce in Tallahassee. And a lot of people don't get it. You get it because I don't care where you play football at in the United States.
It's not hot enough.
There's no hotter place
in August
than Tallahassee.
Yes. And the fresh grass cut.
So the fresh grass cut.
The grass itching your skin.
Bro, they don't understand.
So it stick to you.
Hey, listen, I'll never forget when I went to Florida State from Delray. I'm thinking Delray, you know, we're near Miami. We're closer to the equator. Well, Tallahassee can't be as hot as Delray. Yeah, but Delray, we're right there on the ocean. We get that ocean breeze all the time, right? Man, that first summer in Tallahassee, bro, I knew. Bro, this ain't no joke right here. This ain't no joke right here.
What's Marvin Jones' nickname?
Shade tree. There you go, Doc. There you go. So listen, folks, man, you and I can do this for 3 hours, but we got about 10 more minutes, 10, 15 more minutes left. I want to cover some things about what you've been doing.
Okay.
Now, you did win a national championship at Florida State, right?
Yes.
The first one in 1993.
Yes.
And I want to tell you, y'all didn't just win that for your football team. You won it for all of us. Because we were close. Back in the late 70s, we were close, hoping that we'd get the chance. But we didn't get the opportunity. But we were right there ranked in the top three my last 2 years. So we were right there. We were getting there. And then, you know, as we go on to Jamie Dukes and Deion's group, they were getting there. Mm-hmm. But when y'all got there, y'all sealed the deal. And, bro, I can't tell you, man, I cried.
Me too.
When y'all came across that field, and I'm telling you, I got mad because, you know, when we thought the game was over, we had to go back. Mm-hmm. Remember, I was like, oh, man, don't let nothing go wrong now. We had to go back and do it again, right? And so we thought the game was over, and it wasn't over, ladies and gentlemen. So because we had to go back to the sideline and play some more seconds. And we got it done. Bruh, listen, man, we had been waiting for so long. So it's like I won that national championship. I was with y'all that night, right? You know, and so I'll never forget the feeling. Even to this day, I talk about that one. Because at the end of the day, even though we won three, every one of them is special. But there's none like that first one.
Nah.
Bruh, there's none like that first one.
Let me tell you something.
It was a special time.
I've been blessed to play in some big games against some big opponents and situations that you dream about when you go to college and you dream about when you're growing up in high school and in middle school and you're playing Little League. But that game right there mentally was probably one of the most draining events I've ever been a part of because of everything we had on our shoulders. We knew first of all, like you said, we finally got to the championship game.
There you go.
And we came into that game knowing that we were better than Nebraska, but we also knew that Nebraska wasn't scared of us.
They weren't scared, right? Absolutely. We
had played them the year before, and we beat them pretty bad the year before. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they were a different beast. You know, Tommy Frazier, you know, that thing he did. And, I mean, you know, they had Lawrence Phillips was a true freshman. Had Trev Alberts on the outside, you know, mm-hmm. was the Butkus Award winner. Mm-hmm. And he was the best pass rusher that I had faced up to that point. Wow. And so when you look at all the things and like I said, everybody's on the sideline and the expectation is for us to go and mop them.
Right.
Well, they came in with a different game plan. And as that game progressed, mm-hmm. it wasn't about the physicality of the game. Mm-hmm. It was about the mental aspect of it, mm-hmm. holding on and understanding mm-hmm. every little intangible counts.
Right.
Everything that you've practiced up to this point, the right step, you know, how many steps when you pass prone, you know, getting your shoulder across, you know, taking the right angle. I mean, all those little things that Coach Bowden and the coaching staff had pressed upon us. Because when you're great, you feel like you don't have to do the little things.
Right, and absolutely.
They drilled that in us. So I think that game, it meant so much to us. And to be able to do it for guys like yourselves that, you know, brought us to the school, you know, it was such a good feeling, man.
Man, I'll never forget it, bro. I'll never forget it. It was so special. And then, you know, Coach Bowden worked so hard so many years doing things the right way, building the program. And that was only the thing that was left to do is to win a championship, right? And to see that wide right in Tallahassee when I was there, and I forget what year that was. It was 91. To see that wide right and that close, because I'm gonna be honest with y'all, and everybody know this, and I'm glad we don't dodge nobody. And at the time, the Miami Florida State rivalry was heated, and it was almost like whoever win this game
gonna win the championship,
gonna win the national title, right? And so if you think about us not having to play Miami, we got another 5-6 ships on our ticket. Yeah,
but you know what? That wasn't who Coach Bowden was, because he could have easily backed out of that.
Oh, he could have, absolutely. He could have done that. And to this day, Florida State is still playing Miami and Florida.
Mm-hmm. But that was one of the things in the
ACC. Florida and Miami don't play each other anymore.
Well, you know, that was one of the things when Miami joined the ACC, they made sure that even though they were in the Coastal Division, it was a rivalry that we had to have.
We had to continue to
play. And because that's the money game. That's the game where you find out if you are good and good enough to play at the next level.
Absolutely.
You know, I think about some of the guys that were across the – I had to block Lawrence Sapp. I had to block Ray Lewis. You know, these are two first ballot Hall of Famers. You know, people always talk about, man, this guy, look, I had to play against these guys.
I had to play against these dudes.
The biggest game of the year. You know? That was a part of it. You know, if you played in that Miami Florida State game, you played in the best college football rivalry ever, hands down, with the most athletes ever. I don't care what nobody says. That was the game. Ever. You know, Florida, to me, it's like I tell people, playing Florida, when we played them at Doak, you knew you were going to beat them. Playing at Florida, feel okay. You're going to have to try and get up out of there. Miami, it didn't matter where you played. They could beat you anywhere you played them. You had to go and you had to put it all in.
That's right. And you know, it's amazing. During my day, Miami was not a big deal. Miami was like a 7-4 team, I'm going to say almost my whole time at Florida State. But we split with them my 4 years. Mm-hmm. They won two, we won two. Florida, we beat them all 4 years when I was there. So, but Florida was the rivalry back then. You see, back then, we even started working on Florida plays in 2-a-days. So at the end of every practice, we had Gator plays. And we started working, and you know, we played in the last regular season game of the season, right? Late November. And we were working on Gator plays in August. That's how it was back then. But Miami became a big foe in the 80s, and they started to put their thing together. Always had great athletes because, you know, even during my time, O.J. Anderson, Jim Burke, John Swain. I mean, I can go on to Jim Kelly. You know, all of them were there. Yeah. You know, even though they were 7-4, they were there.
Yeah.
You know, and so we did have to compete. I mean, it's like they didn't have nobody. They had some people. And so, but listen, man, it's just been the greatest thing for the state of Florida.
Yes.
And those rivalries, it's going to get better and better. It's going to get back to it. But the Miami-Florida State game is still a good game.
Absolutely.
It's still a good game. But listen, folks, we're about to come to the end. And I know you've been doing several things since you left football and things like that. But you're doing some analyst stuff with ESPNU. Mm-hmm. And I see you doing some acting. One night I was sitting here, me and my wife watching Greenleaf, and I'm just sitting there watching the show. You know what I'm saying? I say, Cyril, that's four for the team. It took me back, man. It just really just took me back, right? And then I see this role that you had on the Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Jeremiah, if you can hear me, go ahead and cue one of those up for me. Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Yeah. Hit me with the Falcon in the Winter, the movie. And I thought, that part was for you, man.
Yeah.
Or you made that part, right? we can show this, man. We got to show it because, man, Foe is a talented young man. He can do a lot of things. He need to be on Monday Night Football or somewhere like that with the big ticket because he's that good, ladies and gentlemen.
I appreciate that, man. I've been blessed, man.
Oh man, I mean, you do a great job, man. I mean, I follow you, man. I'm one of your fans. So Jeremiah, you got a cue? All right, so we're gonna try to get through this, and hopefully
it's not gonna let me do it because it's so too special.
All right, well, cool. Well, we're not gonna say it, but ladies and gentlemen. If you can go see The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Foe, tell me a little bit about that movie. Who's in that? Who's the stars in that movie?
Well, you've got, why did you have to ask me that? Now my mind is going blank, man.
But you've got the guy who plays, he's one of the Iron Man, right?
Yes.
Young black actor.
No, he actually played in, he's been in all of the Captain America movies.
Captain America. There he is right there. I can't call his name either, but he's a great actor. Yeah. And there's four right there in the middle of all that. He's a bartender right there serving it up. And he got a snake in his hand.
now that was, you know, the thing about that, Bobby, that was a real snake.
That's you got to be kidding me. Are you serious?
That's a real rattlesnake. They sent me to sushi school learning how to use the knife because the knives are so sharp.
Wow.
And so we did that take maybe 30 times. So really? I had to keep cutting snakes open. And you know, and the cool thing about it though, the action sequence, and that's Anthony Mackie is the young man.
Anthony Mackie, that's it, right?
But the action sequence, I got to really see how they do the stunts and whatnot. And so being a part of that, man, and seeing that whole process, it took us 3 days to shoot this one scene.
Oh, and wow!
It was about 10 degrees because the way they built the set, it's in an alley. Of Griffin, Georgia. And so you've got, it's almost like it was built and it became a wind tunnel. And we shot those scenes in December. And it was like the coldest days of the year. And you had to be in that wind tunnel. And I mean, it was brutal. But it's like, and you know, I'm terrified of snakes. But it's like, okay, dude, you got marble right here. What you gonna do, man? You know, you got to man up, you know?
You got to man up.
If you notice, hey. I got a glove on. I made a plastic glove. So I'm like, man, I can't pick the snake up, man, and feel it in my hand. And it was cool. I mean, it was, like I said, truly a blessing to be a part of that production.
Oh, absolutely, man. But, you know, I've seen you on several things, man. You do such a stand-up job acting. And then you got that look, Foe. You know, you got that look. I like the way you looked at it. I said, looking at him like that, right? And so man, that was a great scene right there. I really enjoyed that, man. All right. Now I gotta go out and see the whole movie now.
Yeah.
I gotta go see it. And now talk about you with ESPNU. Tell me about that. How you've been working with that.
Well, I started in 2012, and I've kind of graduated. I've started out doing ESPN3. Then I started doing ESPN Classic Games, ESPN News, ESPNU, and I've done a couple of games on ESPN2. So I've worked all the platforms except ESPN1.
Right,
But, you know, it's been a blessing to do that as well. It's a challenge because I'm in a field where 99% of the guys are ex-NFL players.
Right.
I think I may be the only analyst that did not play in the NFL.
Okay.
And so it was, you know, it's a tough field to get into. And with ESPN, you have to realize you've got young talent coming out every year.
That's the
problem.
If
you're not on top of your game, you know, they'll move on to the next one.
Right.
And, you know, so you've got to be able to bring something to the table. And one of the things I think that allowed me to stand out is I'm not scared to have a different opinion.
Absolutely. And,
you know, the thing that I tell people all the time in this business, you can have a different opinion as long as you can support it. You know, and that's what it's all about. And so
I think
that has been the key for me. And everywhere I go to call games, when they find out I played at Florida State, the first question they ask, you know, is Coach Bowden really the way we see on TV? And, you know, I always tell them no. And they said, I knew it. I did. I said, he's better.
He's better.
Oh, wow.
He's better.
And ask me about it. And ask me about playing at Florida State. And, Bobby, I'm talking about I've been at Portland State, Fargo, North Dakota, Grand Forks, North Dakota, Davis, California. And they're asking me about Coach Bowden.
That's amazing. That's amazing, man. That's amazing, man. Well, you know, he's touched a lot. He touched a lot of people's lives. And that's the thing that I reflect on when I think about him. I think about how he touched us and how he made us young men, young boys, turned us into men, and how he taught us how to respect one another and to come together and do a job together. I've never seen a man that can unite kids like Coach Bowden.
Well, Bobby, remember this? Remember when we played? You couldn't have earrings, you couldn't have facial hair.
Your
mustache can stop right here.
Yeah, stop right there. Nothing but below the top lip.
I used to hate that. I never understood. But then when I got out of school and got into you know, my professional life, There were jobs where you couldn't have facial hair.
You couldn't have facial hair.
You couldn't wear earrings.
He was getting those ready.
Things have changed now, but back then it was about discipline and following the rules, even if you didn't like them. You know, and so you look at all of the stuff that we developed during that time, it helped us to become men.
Absolutely.
You know, we became men physically, but he allowed us and helped us to become men mentally. That's and understanding the sacrifices that you have to make in order to be a part of a team or an organization.
Absolutely. And you know, the other thing about him that's just so rich for me, you know, a lot of times, you know, when you leave a program, when they're done with you, they're done with you.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Coach Bowden's always been my second daddy, right? I tell people in a minute, you know, no matter where I go, no matter, you know, what, if I see him somewhere, you know, he's going to ask me how I'm doing, and then he's going to ask me this question. He said, how Imogene and Richard Butler doing, Reverend Butler doing? I said, Coach, they're still doing good. And this is the impression that he made on my family. My daddy would be 85 the end of the year. He'll be 86 the end of the year. I'm sorry. And before Coach Bowden passed, if Coach Bowden was in 2 hours of my hometown, he's going to get my brother-in-laws to drive him to hear him speak. That's the kind of impression he made on my family, right?
Bobby, remember we surprised him here in Atlanta when he came to speak for an FCA?
That's right.
And when we did the surprise and we described something to make him realize who we were.
Right.
When I walked out and gave him a hug, he asked me how my dad was doing.
How your dad was doing?
He asked me how my dad was doing. And my dad was going through some health issues at the time.
Right.
For him to do that, that meant a lot to me because he remembered.
He remembers. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's funny. He don't forget a name. That same night, there's a guy sitting to the right of me. And I don't know if you remember this. His name is Jeff Merrill. Now, Jeff and I played, he was one of my teammates at the Falcons. Mm-hmm. But Jeff Merrill played for Coach Bowden at West Virginia before he came to Florida State.
I remember that. Yes.
And he shared the story about how he was mad one night and tore up the dorm.
Yeah.
And he brought him in his office and had that conversation with him. And he said, Jeff, tell him if I'm right. Now, Coach Bowden was, 90 years old at the time.
Yep.
And he remembered that story as if it happened last night. That's just the kind of guy he was, man. So the relationship that we all had with him, the way he spoke into our life, you know, we can be separated from him, and I can still hear his voice saying certain things right now.
The coolest thing I ever got to do, I called an Akron game, and Jeff was the coach. Not Jeff, excuse me, Terry.
Terry was the head coach.
And so I'm talking to Terry on the phone and during the coach's call, and Chuck Amato was his defensive coordinator. The question I always ask defensive coordinators is, Coach, how comfortable are you, you know, loading the box and playing man on the outside?
Right.
And, you know, I asked Chuck that, and I knew the answer already, but I asked him for all of my broadcast partners so they would know. And he said, I said, Coach, are you comfortable loading the box and playing man on the outside? And he said, Forrest, and you know it.
You know what we do.
it's like you know we can bring that heat all game long.
Yes, sir.
So, you know that coaching tree. When I called a game in Miami, and Coach Rick walks out, and he sees me sitting there, and we go to hugging and talking for like the first 10, 15 minutes of the coaches meeting, we reminisce about
back in the day. Absolutely.
You know, my producer, they got to understand, look, man, me and this guy, we won a championship together, man. We went through it together, man.
That's right. So, bro, we need some time.
But
I tell you, folks, man, there hasn't been no experience in my life like our FSU experience.
None.
You know, it was special to it helped it allowed me to become who I am today. I grew up in that system. Not only Coach Bowden, but Jack Stanton, who was the old defensive coordinator before Mickey got in there, who was also the DB coach, was special to me. Coach George Henshaw, who recruited me down in Delray. He was the guy that came to Hey, and I couldn't even catch the, hey, after a basketball game, I couldn't ride the bus home with the team. I had to get in the car with Henshaw because he was keeping everybody away from me. And Henshaw would come to my house for and stay, because back then they can stay till 11. He'll leave 10:59, walk out the door. They keep the other in the car. They can't come in there.
You know, so, that, John Neeson was that guy for me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, John was a great man. John was a great man. So one of the things that Coach Bowden said, it's time for us to wrap up. We're going to wrap up with this. One of the things he said, everybody would give him credit, which he deserved credit, is he was a great head coach. But he said the key to his thing was his assistant coaches, the coaches that he hired around him, right? Mm-hmm. And we all know he had some great assistant coaches. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had the best offensive line coach. We had the best offensive coordinator. We had the best D coordinator. We had the best DB. We had it all. And so, and men who could line up, because Coach Bowden was going to do it his way, right? He was going to do it his way. And they all formed a partnership that allow us to be successful and to do the things that we did. And it was nothing like that, man. It was
absolutely nothing like it.
Before we end our show today, we'd like to mention one more time, this show is presented by Bet Online.
Well, look, folks, man, thanks for being with us tonight, man. Love you. Hey, we're going to do this. We got to do this again.
Absolutely, man, anytime.
Because we got a lot that we can talk about. So you and I got to do this again. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, that's our show for tonight. Hey, if you like the show, share it with your friends, comment it. This is 100 Yards of Football, and this is our legend segment. And we had the great Forrest Connolly, better known as Big Four, with us tonight. Thank you again, brother, for your time.
Thank you, man.
What is your favorite moment from football history? What teams and players are you cheering on? And who will win it all? We want to hear from you, our listeners. Head over to 100 Yards of Football Sports Talk Radio's Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch and leave us a comment. We might use your suggestion in an upcoming episode. Tune in daily to the podcast and watch our show live every week. We are 100 Yards of Football, Sports Talk Radio, on the Believe Podcast Network.